Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a fun one. But before we get started, it's important to recognize our sponsor, OnPay. Without them, we could not be sharing these stories. Today on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Corey Hewitt with Gimme Vending. Welcome, Corey.
Hey, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get too far into things, tell us about Gimme Vending. How are you serving folks?
So we build inventory control software and hardware that helps people who operate vending machines and grocery stores.
And are there a couple of those out there? How big is that market?
It's a pretty big market. It serves people who do a lot of deliveries and food service in an unattended fashion. And you can see vending machines, obviously, everywhere, office buildings, all the way to jails and factories, and anywhere where you want to grab something without having to go through a cashier. And then the grocery store element, that one's pretty self-evident. Our niche within that specifically are the people who serve the grocery stores and deliver things directly to them.
Now, in the vending space, is that something that because of COVID and the pandemic, has that grown or has that gotten worse in this climate?
So in this climate, I think we've seen two things happen moving in different directions. On the vending side, a lot of the places where our vending customers had their machines set up, like office buildings or factories, some of those were impacted by the closures as people figured out how to safely stay open. So a lot of our vending operators were negatively affected by COVID with a lot of their accounts having to close. On the flip side, we did see that a lot of our people who were making deliveries to grocery stores, especially national bakeries and some of our coffee providers, some of our dairy providers, I think we could look at the state of the shelves ourselves and see that there was a lot more demand that had shifted from these I'm eating out or I'm eating while I'm away from home to now I'm consuming things while I'm at home. So while our vending partners were affected negatively, our grocery partners were affected and saw their sales velocity increase as a result of people staying home.
Now, does convenience stores, are they part of the grocery category?
For us, they aren't. Usually the convenience stores, grocery stores, and vending machines are somewhat interrelated in industrial as an industry connection. But for us, our customers in particular are either people who operate vending machines or people who make deliveries directly to grocery stores. We don't have many people who are in the convenience store space as our customers.
Now, how'd you get into this line of work?
So when I was in middle school, I bought my first quarter operated gumball machine. And from there, graduated up into the larger snack and soda machines. And it exposed an issue that I saw where it was difficult to keep track of exactly what was in the machines and when you need to go back to restock them. So in 2014, I met Evan Jarecki, and he and I founded the company together. And we've grown since 2014 from just a little add-on that could help people in the field with their vending machines to now a complete software that manages inventory and merchandising and automates that for both people who operate vending machines and, like I said, people who make deliveries directly to grocery stores.
So at one point, the vending machine business, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, I have a memory of vending machine when I was a kid. My father played racquetball with a guy that would stock vending machines. And like, we would go to his warehouse as a kid, and he had like all, like you said, gumballs and like all the stuff that goes inside them, like in a warehouse environment. And for a kid, that was like, you know, it was like being in Willy Wonka's factory, right? It was like all the
exactly.
All the stuff you couldn't get.
You personified the cliche, right? The kid in the candy store,
right.
Or essentially the kid in the snack store.
Right. So it was just like, you know, all of the stuff, like a whole, you know, 100 gumballs in a bag. And it was like everything was right there, you know, so you can take whatever you wanted without putting in the quarter. Now, that was kind of a small business. Was that kind of how people were running vending, as kind of these kind of mom and pop, I got a route, I got permission to put these up, and now it's maybe consolidating differently?
Yeah, you've got a spread of all different size people who operate vending machines. It's an excellent hobby for a lot of people to get into. They own a couple machines. It brings them a little bit of passive income. It's something that they can manage, and it helps them build a connection within their very local community, all the way up to people who have lots and lots of vending machines. And these are some of the, if you will, sleeper businesses. One of the largest operators is the fifth largest employer globally, and they own a bunch of vending machines too. And then there's a smattering of companies at every scope in between, from the largest all the way down to somebody who owns two or three. For us, most of our customers are a little bit larger, and most of our customers have at least 1,000 vending machines or more. And that's the type of size operator that we typically work with. I actually wasn't that large of an operator when I got started. The biggest that I got up to was 26 vending machines. And when you mentioned being able to go grab a bag of 100 gumballs, I remember in high school, I was dating a girl who loved gum. And since I had a like industrial sized brand new pack of gumballs, that was one of my gifts to when I was dating in high school, and she absolutely loved it. But yeah, that's the connection, I guess, that we have with, you know, people who operate a couple and the people who operate a bunch.
And then, but you started out kind of at the bottom of this food chain, and then you saw the, what your technology and what your value is to the larger players, and you evolved kind of the thinking as you got deeper and deeper in the industry.
Exactly. It definitely provided the spark, which was, if this affects somebody that's, you know, relatively a small operator, how does this affect people who are a little bit larger and upstream in this market? And so before we built anything, Evan and I went on hundreds, literally hundreds of interviews with people across the country to understand what their biggest challenges were as they operated their larger vending operations. And we got a lot of comments from, you know, credit card readers, which at the time were still pretty new and being added to vending machines, all the way to thinking about new products that could go into it. But ultimately, what we discovered was consistent with what I had seen when I was operating my first route. And that was, it can become a challenge to keep track of what's in your machine and when to go back. And the larger you got, it actually made that challenge just more pronounced.
So then what was kind of the big breakthrough that you said from a technological standpoint, hey, if we do this, this will solve that?
For a lot of our customers, it was a little less about what could we do from a cutting edge technology. They weren't demanding, you know, like I mentioned, we launched in 2014. Nobody in that time was demanding that we have AI or machine learning, some of the things that we have today. They just wanted to be able to answer some fundamental questions about their business. And that was, where are my machines? What's inside of them? When did somebody visit them last? What do I need to bring back? And when do I go next time? And they had solutions, partial solutions to these questions, but our mandate was use technology to answer those questions as accurately as possible, as well as possible, and as timely as possible. So we ended up inventing a little hardware device that's unique to the grocery store and unique to the vending machine. It's on an obscure data format called DEX, D-E-X. And so we built a little hardware device that could speak just that language. You could plug into a vending machine and it started talking to your phone. You could plug into a grocery store and start talking to your phone. And we could use that information to help answer those questions. We also built some extensive software on top of it that could take the information that it was receiving and turn it into something that made it really easy for the person in the field to interact with, like graphical product maps of what was where and little bubbles that they could tap to identify how many products they put into each spot to keep it interesting, engaging, but still at the same time, and more importantly, quick. To use. So through the hardware and the software, we went to answer some really fundamental questions. Where are my machines? What's inside of them? When do I go back and what do I bring?
And then once you kind of got that down and it was working in a smaller scale, at what point were the bigger players saying, you know what, this is something we need? And then you know, were there breadcrumbs that were leading you to, okay, this is going to work for these mega companies, not just the mom and pop?
Actually, we launched with a mega company. That's something that probably, you know, that's probably the biggest reason that we have a company today, is we launched with a mega company that really wanted to answer those questions well so that they could do a good job for their own accounts and their own customers. Nobody likes to go to a vending machine if it's got like empty spots or, you know, if the food doesn't look fresh, nobody wants that. And so they were really focused and willing to spend heavily to make sure that every time you walked up to one of their machines, it was fresh and fully stocked. And they saw us as part of the solution that could make that happen. And so we launched with our first customer. At the time, the name of the company was called Southern Refreshment Services, one of the biggest operators in the Southeast. They've been acquired now by an even larger company. But at the time, we got to launch with them. We got to talk to their staff every single day about how our product was working for them. And it made such a huge difference for our company and our ability to grow from that point.
So now how did that relationship come about? How does a company, like in your case, a small company, get in, you know, in front of those people and in front of them in a way that they took you seriously?
I think it's two things. I was just reading one of David Cummings' blogs. He's a big investor in the Southeast, particularly Atlanta. And one of his recent blog posts talks about how some of the most valuable things that can help happen for a startup relate to the help of a stranger. And we definitely were the beneficiary of that, where we got to talk to the owner of the company that I mentioned, that our first customer, while we were at Georgia Tech, before we had built the product, and while we were just thinking about what the solution could look like and the value that the solution could bring. And through that interaction, he stayed aware of what we were working on. And when we mentioned we wanted to launch with the product, he gave us an opportunity to do it in a limited fashion with just one piece of his company to start with, and gave us that chance, gave us that shot. And you know, that happened because of two reasons. One is, you know, a really collaborative and supportive environment at Georgia Tech. And the other one is, you know, a really good guy, a really good business owner who was willing to, you know, give newer entrepreneurs a chance and a small piece of something to try with and prove that they could do a better job. So I'd say that I was helped by, you know, our company was helped by Georgia Tech and the courage of, you know, a more experienced entrepreneur willing to take a chance.
So how does that story play when you're talking to your other Georgia Tech entrepreneurs, when your first customer is like one of the biggest players in the industry?
You know, as an entrepreneur, you don't have control over much. What you do have control over, though, is where you spend your time and focus. And so as an entrepreneur, and what we did and what I think helped us when we did have the opportunity to get in front of these people, what helped us is we weren't thinking about technology for technology's sake. We were working really hard to focus on what the outcome or the output of the technology was. You know, the technical sophistication when we launched wasn't massive, but it was a laser beam focus on, you know, these basic questions. Where are the machines? What's inside of them? When do you go back? What do you bring? And if you can answer those for us, you know, that was the example. If we could answer those questions really, really well, better than anyone else, then we'd be valuable regardless of what technology we use to help answer those questions. And that's our advice. You know, you asked what would maybe be advice that we'd give other entrepreneurs. It would be, let's not think about the technology just for technology's sake, even though that can be interesting. It's really thinking about what does the technology do? What's the value behind it? And how do you pitch that to people? And if they fall in love with what you can do, then they'll be pretty open-minded to giving you the freedom to figure out how to do it.
Yeah, but that's an amazing story. You got to, looking back, that's an amazing story. I mean, that a lot of stars aligned in order to make that happen.
Looking back, you're absolutely right. And it's what's motivated us now to do as much as we can. We, you know, we're trying to stay as involved as possible in the Atlanta startup scene just to help other entrepreneurs that are just getting going right off the bat. It's why we're super excited about programs like Startup Up Georgia. That launched 2 weeks ago out of the Atlanta Tech Village. That's helping take people who might be unemployed or looking for a change in career and give them the skills and experience that they need and education that they need to become entrepreneurs themselves. It's, you know, hopefully why this community in Atlanta stays vibrant and encourages other entrepreneurs to keep going, because without the occasional help of strangers, you know, I don't know how we would have been here, and I don't know how others will be able to grow as quickly.
Right. It takes a community in order to, you know, pull off success that you're having. That's for sure. I'm a Miami Dolphin fan, and we just got Tua, the quarterback from Alabama, as the quarterback. And he said, somebody told him, if you want to go fast, you travel alone. But if you want to you know, work on something big that has meaning, you have to bring others along.
That makes so much sense. And you must see it all the time, you know, based on what you do with radio and connecting with a lot of business owners.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's that story of the lone wolf out there, you know, with the brilliant idea and then forces it to market. It just, that's a myth. That's not reality.
Now, from my own experience, yeah, that's what we've seen too.
Now, it seems like that, you know, the pandemic has kind of maybe accelerated some of the way that we're kind of even shopping, even in the way of grocery stores and this kind of touch-free, cashier-free kind of environment. I was in Chicago at the end of last year, and there was an Amazon store you can go in just with your app. And then there wasn't a person there. It was like a convenience store, but it was not a manned. I don't think there was a person. And you just buy stuff and it knows what you bought and then it just hits your Amazon. Is that a trend that's happening elsewhere, or is that kind of an anomaly?
This space is heating up, and that's really exciting for us. For us as Evan and I, for us as the company, for us as everybody in the industry, I think today, because before Amazon Go started working on a cashier-free store, people thought about cashier-free checkouts as basically just like self-scan kiosks and vending machines. And that space needed the breath of a little bit additional competition and innovation to spark a lot of energy to go into it. And so when Amazon Go opened their first store a couple of years ago, and now that they're opening up a bunch more, it started an arms race. Now you've got well-funded startups like iFi that have raised tens of millions of dollars to open up cashier-free checkouts. We just saw that Circle K announced that they've invested and are partnering with a new startup to be able to offer cashier-free checkouts. It's sparked a lot of great innovation that's now just starting to occur in our space. And it's propelled a lot of our customers to start taking a deeper look at, you know, hey, how do we look at formats that are a little bit different than your typical micro market, which is a series of coolers and shelves of products with a kiosk. And now how do we look at, do we want to offer, you know, these smaller format stores without cashiers? Our industry already has the experience, the culture, and the team to handle what it's like to restock and then leave and let people shop on their own without having a cashier there. Whereas a lot of other companies aren't used to that. If you told, for instance, if you told Kroger, take all of your employees out of the store and you can only visit it once or twice a day, it would be massively change. There'd be so much change in that, be massive, massive change behind that. But if you told our customers to operate a larger format store, they're already used to only being able to visit it, you know, maybe once or twice a day. So we're, you know, that was a long answer, but we're really excited about what's happening in the space with people like Amazon Go jumping in.
Because those stores, in essence, are just giant vending machines, right?
Yeah, except instead of typing a keypad, it's so much more, if you will, engaging when you can walk up, look at the product, touch the product, grab it, and then leave. But yeah, it's a vending machine if you think about it. It's a checkout-free, pre-packaged store where you buy things.
Right. So, I mean, to me, like just kind of from a macro level, it's the same activity of pressing, you know, E3 and then the chips coming out, except you're just going in there and grabbing the Coke and walking out. Like the box isn't a machine. It's like a little store.
The box is big enough to walk inside.
Right.
And you can grab it yourself, but absolutely. And so I think that the understated heroes of this tale that we're going to be talking about with unattended retail for the next decade or longer are actually going to be the people who have been in it already, because they can take new technology and operate what they've been used to doing and what they have just a lot of experience and infrastructure to support. But a lot of these newer players have technology, but they don't have the experience and the infrastructure to support a lot of these behaviors. So I think that we're going to see exciting things happen from a group of people who aren't terribly noisy and aren't gathering, you know, a tremendous amount of press, but I think they're going to be able to do and execute really, really well in this new world of unattended retail.
And does that kind of bleed into unattended, maybe fast food, like where you can go in and order something and not really have a human interacting with you, but maybe behind the wall, there are people making things or tweaking things, but your experience as a customer is just with kind of an empty room.
I think so. And this is beyond my personal experience operating a business, but what we've seen and what we've talked to other entrepreneurs about, I was talking to somebody who's looking at opening up basically a WeWork, but for commercial kitchen space, where a lot of companies realize they don't need these huge dedicated lobbies and eating rooms anymore. And this was even before March, before everything happened. I can only imagine that the interest has just grown since then, but where a lot of restaurants are realizing, hey, there's a lot of people who just want the food. And if we can deliver it to them, they don't want to walk into a store. And so it looks like there's going to be new places opening up where if you wanted to start a new gourmet cupcake confectionery and you didn't want or have the capacity to invest in a huge building with, you know, great corner access so everyone can see it, if you just wanted to go through an app and have it delivered directly to people, you might have a new space where you can month to month, have a commercial kitchen that's inspected by the health department and fully, you know, up to standard, up to code, and deliver a really quality product. So like you said, as the world is changing maybe away from attended consumption to unattended consumption, I think we're going to see new avenues for people to get started, and technology is going to make that so much easier and so much more attractive to first-time entrepreneurs.
Now, in those unattended places, how does the business owner kind of get over their fear of, oh, there's someone's going to just come in and just steal everything?
I guess that fear will always be present to some extent. You know, we have methods of preventing that and discouraging that through cameras and through tracking and through making sure we control access to the building. Like with the Amazon Go store, you tap your phone before you get in, and it keeps track of what you buy. So when you walk out, the transaction happens on the back end. So I think you're going to see a lot of safeguards in place from a technology side, but nothing, if you will, would keep us perfectly safe. Even in attended stores, if you think about it, somebody could run in, grab an armful of products and run out.
Right.
You may not be able to catch them. At least in this case, you have lots and lots of cameras from lots of angles to catch it. What we've seen in the field so far is it looks like the theft rate is below 3% in pretty much all of the locations where these are installed. That I haven't seen a published report come out, but just from what we've seen and talking to our customers, it looks like it's well below 3%. And that's something that's tolerated by what we have available to us.
Now, what is the hurdle then to kind of roll it out even faster in more locations? If it's not the fear part of theft, what's holding people back from doing this?
You know, I think there's still a lot of work to do on commercializing the technology so that it works in all sorts of environments, you know, not just the 80% of standard configurations, but how do you start to handle more and more corner cases? And then how do you make it affordable? And I don't work at Amazon and I don't have any special access to their behind the scenes information. But from what we've seen from published reports, there are still a couple technical challenges that make it pretty expensive through computational power and the technology running behind the scenes to do all the image processing, to do all the tracking of products, to install sensors at every single product location to understand what's going on. And obviously, a big innovative and courageous company like Amazon has the resources to do that. But I think a lot of other businesses like our customers, they've taken a very practical approach to making sure that the ROI is demonstrated before they roll this out. And so to see it really become pervasive everywhere you go with this type of technology, I think we're going to need to see it continue to be deployed, generate money, get a little bit cheaper so you can deploy it more, et cetera, et cetera.
So you think we're like super early on this, but it's a trend that you think that it's going to happen.
We're super early and the trend is just going to get more and more from here.
Because technology usually gets cheaper and then probably people will be fast followers behind whatever Amazon's doing once they figure it out a little more.
Exactly. That's totally what we expect to see happen. And I don't think we have a completely checkout-free store in Georgia yet, for instance, but we're excited to see one of those open up. And by that, I mean like the Amazon Go style where you don't even have to scan the item in front of a kiosk. There are lots of our customers who operate unattended stores where you scan with a kiosk, but this whole idea of tap phone, walk in, grab and leave, I don't think we've seen one of those open yet in Georgia, and we'll be really excited to see when they do. And I bet it'll be in less than 12 months.
Yeah. Well, the one I saw in Chicago, you know, it's like it takes you back a little bit because it's so counter to everything you've ever done in your life. You know, like it's a kind of a quirky thing to just experience because you've never experienced anything like that.
And there must be a little part of our brain every time we go in a store that's like, do not accidentally walk into the store. You don't want to get, you know, arrested for shoplifting. And so that little part of the brain, the first time I went to an Amazon Go store, intellectually, cerebrally, I understood, yes, I grab it and I walk out. But that little part of the back of the brain was like, you're a shoplifter. Go back. You have to pay for these.
Well, and also it's a little of the fear, like, you know, the mini bar, they go, if you pick that up, you bought it. Like, you know, there's like, you know, what are the rules of engagement here? Like, what am I allowed to do and not do?
Exactly. Yeah, I totally understand that.
Now, Corey, if somebody wanted to learn more about Gimme Vending, what is the best coordinates to get a hold of you or somebody on your team?
The best way to do it is through our website, and you can find us at vending.ai. If you type in vending.ai, you'll go straight to us, and you can learn more about our software, our hardware, our team, our culture. You know, we're always looking for people that would be great additions to the team, and you can find all of that on our website.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for sharing your story and congratulations on all the success.
Hey, thanks for having me again. And it was delightful to be on the show.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. And remember, this work would not be possible without the support of our sponsor, OnPay. Please support them so we can continue to share these important stories.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com.